All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, week two edition of the show here on JoeBucksFan.com. I'm Bobby Fenton. We got the Bucks and the Panthers Sunday at 1 o'clock, and we got the Bucks having lost to the Saints in their opener and the debut of Tom Brady as well this past Sunday, 34-23. We're going to cover it all on the show today, so thank you for joining us. It feels great to be in the rhythm of a season now, a weekly rhythm. The game's coming on Sundays or sometimes Mondays. And it just has that nice schedule to it. And I'm feeling great. Even though the Bucks are 0-1, I think they're going to win this weekend. I think things are fine. And one of the things I want to talk about today, first of all, was the reaction of the fan base after the game Sunday. Because I was fairly impressed. You know, there was obviously a lot of hype about this team, and still is, and about having Tom Brady, and about the new roster, and about how the Bucks are finally one of the favored teams, one of the guys that everybody else is gunning for, all that stuff. So I was worried that if they didn't come out in the first game and light it up, there might be a lot of overreaction. Oh my God, all this hype, and what there's a big dud, Bobby, blah, blah. And everybody seems pretty measured. I've seen a little bit of that on Twitter and things like that, but not too bad. And you know, when you play your opener on the road against not just the team that's still the favorite in the division, but one of the favorites in the entire league, you know, that's a tough ask any time of the season. And if that's your opener, you know, that's a game that you don't necessarily pencil in as a W no matter what. So it's okay. The thing about it is, though, and we'll talk about this today, is I thought the Bucks could have won that game even despite not really playing all that well. And I think that, I hate to use cliches, but I think they beat themselves more than anything. There were so many mistakes that were preventable. And, you know, it's not like Drew Brees went out there and lit it up against the Bucks himself. I mean, the defense did well. We're going to talk about all this. But I was actually encouraged in some ways. It was discouraging, though, to see the mistakes that are, again, so preventable. And, you know, we'll go one by one through it here a little bit. But overall, this Bucks team, I mean, if the Saints are the cream of this league, and they may very well be, and that Bucks effort out there can keep them in the game for four quarters, and it wasn't even that tidy of an effort, then when the Bucks pull things together and play well, they're going to be hard to beat. So, again, these are all things we'll get to as we go through the show, but I want to thank you for listening, and thanks to our sponsor over at Bill Curry Ford, where, as I always tell you guys, they've got everything up to date with the times as far as social distancing and things like that. It's totally fine to go to their very spacious place over on Dale Mabry, a mile north of the stadium. Check out the inventory. Plenty of room for social distancing. All the precautions are taken. And it's actually a good time to buy a car right now, really. So do that if you want to. But if you still don't, you know, some people have reasons and they don't want to be taking any chances, you can do everything at home online. The website is BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E. And if you go there, you can see all the inventory online. And, you know, Bobby, hey, I want to test drive it. I can't just look at it. They'll bring the car to your house or your office. Just tell them. Just call them and tell them what you want. They'll bring it over to you. You can set it up. You can test drive it. If you make the purchase, they'll leave it there, or they'll take it back to Bill Curry Ford and bring it back again if you need to think about it for a while. They'll do all this free of charge. You don't have to worry about that. So don't think buying a car has to be a big production during these times. It really isn't. And Bill Curry Ford has set everything up to make it as easy as possible. That's in addition to the nationwide lifetime warranty. As long as you own the car that you bought at Bill Curry Ford, you have engine trouble years down the road, take it back into the service center, they'll take care of it for you. BillCurryFord.com, again, it's C-U-R-R-I-E, or go check them out a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, where they've been for 60 years now. So a mile south down the highway is where the Bucks will play the Panthers on Sunday. You've probably heard all the numbers and stats. This happens every year when a team loses the opener, which the Bucks did last year too. Of course, this year's Bucks are expected to make the playoffs, unlike previous iterations of this team. So when a team goes 0-1, you hear, oh, 0-2 teams only make the playoffs, something like 19% of the time or something like that. So if you go straight by the numbers, well, hey, Bobby, this almost feels like a must-win game. If we're 0-2, we got less than a 1-5 shot at making the playoffs. And I never liked the term must win or anything like that, but yeah, you don't want to go 0-2. And if you go to the on the road in your opener, like I said, against a really tough Saints team that a lot of people are picking to win the Super Bowl, that's not a crime against humanity to not win that game. But now you've got a Carolina team who's not supposed to have their best season, and you're at home. It's your home game debut and all that stuff. And this is a team you're better than. I mean, this is a game the Bucs should win. And this is a game where if they don't win or if they play mistake-laden football like they did this past Sunday, then I wouldn't call it an overreaction for people to get pretty upset about that loss. But going back to this Sunday, you know, the first thing that stood out to me, and this is the first series of the game, we were all, you know, over the moon. I mean, the Bucs, you know, they ran the ball for 4 yards, and they threw a beautiful 29-yard pass. It was Brady's first completion. Just a play action, everything great. They go right down the field. Brady runs it in himself from like the 2-yard line on a quarterback sneak. Oh man, this is awesome. So one of the things that I wanted to address, and Greg Allman tweeted about it the other day after talking to Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich. The Bucs threw on their second first down play Sunday. It was on that opening drive. Like I said, the 29-yard completion to Godwin on the sideline. On the next 5 first down plays after that, they ran the ball for 0 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 2 yards, and 1 yard. And all told, and we'll go with the first half here because the first half is when your play calling is least affected by the score, the situation. You know, you do things in the second half more tailored to what's on the scoreboard, but the first half is more what you're just doing because you want to do it. In the first half, despite going right out of the gate with a beautiful, almost 30-yard completion on first down, the Bucs, of their 13 first down plays in the first half, ran the ball 8 times. They got 11 yards. They threw it 4 times. They were 4-of-4 for 47 yards. A 5th time, there was an intentional grounding penalty. So that's a passing play. We'll call it 4-of-5 for 47 yards. And the intentional grounding is like a sack. But anyway, my point stands. After the 29-yard completion, not even counting that, 13 more plays on first down, they run the ball for barely a yard a freaking carry. And they just hammer that head into the brick wall, baby. You know why? Greg Allman tweeted it. He said, Leftwich and Arians want an offensive balance. Ooh, balance. I love empty, hollow platitudes like balance that we can just say, hey, who's going to argue with balance, right? Balance is a myth. Balance means nothing. There is no virtue, okay? And people think there is still some. There is no virtue in thinking, oh, I passed it a few times. I need to run it now a few so we're balanced. I don't know who thinks you get extra credit for that. The only thing that matters is yards. And I'm not saying running has no place in football. The running game has a place in football, absolutely. But this thought, oh, well, we can't. You can pass on every first down if you're getting yards and it's working. Especially if you're running the ball for 8 times for 11 yards. I mean, I call it dad plays. And dad is an acronym. It's an abbreviation for donate a down. You're just giving away one of your downs. So we'll just go ahead and start it at 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8, maybe 2nd and 7. You don't get it. That doesn't help anything. I don't know who thinks, oh, well, yeah, I know we didn't get a couple yards more than we only got a yard or two, but you know what? We need to establish running the football. We need to let these guys know we're going to run it at them, and they need to be able to respect the run. No, that is not true. Like, that is markedly, objectively, I should say, and patently untrue. And it's frustrating. And the Bucs aren't the only team that does it. I was watching Monday Night Football the other night, watching the Titans play the Broncos, and they are obsessed. You know the old saying now that you see on Twitter, find someone who loves you like? Find someone in life who's as committed to you as the Titans are to just giving Derrick Henry the ball on first down, no matter what. And he was getting nothing. He's getting 1 yard, 2. He's just 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8. And damn it, next time around, they're doing it again. There's no virtue in that. You don't get any extra credit for it. No one's like, oh, these guys are balanced, man. I'll tell you what. Throw the ball every damn first down if you want to. I'm not saying you should do anything just to do it. I'm saying you should do what works, what's efficient, what moves the ball. So if you add up all the times they tried to run the ball, it doesn't even add up to one of the damn passing plays. But it was it's frustrating because it gets you behind the sticks. It's frustrating because it then affects and informs your play calls on second and third down, and it just makes life generally harder. And again, I'm not trying to say there's no place for running the ball, and I'm not even blaming Ronald Jones or anything like that, although I do think you'll see more Leonard Fournette this week with, you know, he had so few practices, and they got him pretty close to the opener. I think there'll be more, oh, there's the word balance in the run game with different guys carrying the ball. But the point is, I mean, it's really frustrating, and I like Bruce Arians, I like Byron Leftwich, but it's frustrating to hear that sentiment echoed when they should know better. And this has been studied, and it's not even a nerds versus jocks thing where all the analytics guys and they have all their numbers and I don't care what they have. No, I mean, like, do you want to get yards or not? I mean, that's the whole point of this whole thing, right? I mean, that's what everybody's trying to do. Very, very frustrating. And even if you take it all the way into the third quarter, they averaged about 10 yards per passing play and averaged. It got a little better in the third quarter. It got their average up to a whole 3 yards a carry. Woo, second and seven, baby, on first down. 3 yards. So that part really frustrates me. But, you know, when I hear them say Leftwich and Arians want an offensive balance, you know, in my little coach speak mind translator that I have in my mind, that translates to we'd rather jerk ourselves off over how balanced we are than actually get yards. So I really hope, and this will be something I monitor all through the season, and I'm not trying to act like I know more about calling plays than Byron Leftwich or Bruce Arians do, because obviously I do not. But this is something that's glaringly obvious that is easily, I mean, anybody can look this stuff up, okay? It's not just me saying, this isn't my opinion. You saw it, we all saw it. You don't have to run. And the other thing, too, you don't have to run the ball for your play action to work. That's another thing. I think people think, oh, we just got to run it even if it doesn't work just so our play action works. That means nothing. Play action is just as effective if your running game sucks. When the quarterback does that little motion, like he's going to hand it off, linebackers, even safeties and corners, they freeze, they peak just a little extra half second. I don't care if your running game blows. It works, okay? And the Bucs actually, they ran play action 6 times on Sunday. They had double the average yards per pass on the 6 play action passes they ran compared to all the other regular passes they threw in the game. So throw the ball early, throw it often, run play action whenever the hell you want. Even if you haven't even run the ball yet, you can run play action even if you haven't run the ball that game or that series yet. Who cares? Run it. It'll work. It will work. So that is frustrating to hear. As far as going down the actual play, you know, Brady wasn't bad. If you look at his numbers, he had 239 yards. He had 6.6 yards per pass play. Those numbers do not include, they had over 100 yards in pass interference penalties, and those are just as good as actual completed passes, even though they don't count in the stats. So I didn't think Brady was bad. And of course, there was the first interception that Mike Evans broke off the route. That's a communication thing. Arians said it was Evans' fault. Evans said it was Evans' fault. If you go back and look, somebody posted it. I'm sorry, I don't remember who. But if you go back and look at the Titans game last year with Jameis Winston, there was an almost identical, I mean, it's nearly identical interception that Jameis threw to the safety when I believe it was Evans in the same play. Same exact route, broke it off. Instead of going to the seam, he broke it off short and came back to the quarterback, and the ball goes flying over to where the seam route would have been, and it got picked off. Same thing happened against the Titans. Same thing happened with Brady. And it happens. Okay, fine. And then the other one, the pick six by Janoris Jenkins, was all on Brady from the left hash, throwing an out route onto the field side, not the boundary side, so way across, and it was way late on it. Easy pick six for Jenkins, and he scores. Reminiscent of all the pick sixes we used to complain about with Jameis Winston. So that was bad, okay? But overall, I didn't think Brady had a bad game. And, you know, maybe we all need to understand, and I already have this mentality, I'm not expecting Brady to be like a savior of some kind. I'm expecting an upgrade at the quarterback position for sure. I'm expecting better care to be taken of the football for sure, although they didn't get that on Sunday. But I think overall, Brady wasn't bad at all. The offense hurt this team with those two turnovers. One was an actual touchdown for the Saints, and one led to a touchdown. And then we had another fiasco that was a turning point in the game, and that was the kickoff. After a 15-yard penalty on a previous touchdown play for the Saints. They got to kick off from the 50 instead of the 35. Wanted to talk about this real quick. Because first of all, I tip my hat to the Saints. Kicking off from the 50-yard line is an opportunity to do something and try to make something happen. A lot of coaches that aren't Sean Payton, and this is why I like Sean Payton, because he thinks this way. A lot of coaches that aren't Sean Payton would just blast a ball through the end zone for a touchback kicking off from the 50-yard line, when in reality, most kickoffs from the 35-yard line are already touchbacks anyway. So what are you doing? You're wasting those 15 yards. You're giving away a huge 15-yard penalty. Instead, try some mortar kick, as they call it, or try an onside kick, whatever you want. Something that, if it doesn't work, doesn't hurt you, because you're kicking off from the 50 anyway, and the starting field position for the offense will still be what it would have been on a normal kickoff, only you got to try something that might work, and it did work. The mortar kick landed right near the sideline, and the Bucs kickoff team was completely confused trying to handle it. Ball goes on the ground, they never get the thing, and the Saints end up getting the ball. And that leads to another Saints score, and that ultimately is what took the Bucs out of the football game. So, you know, on special teams, first of all, that ball was going out of bounds. And as a special teams player, especially a special teams player who plays near the sideline, you know, when you have all these special teams formations, some guys play in the middle of the field, some guys are lined up on the tips. Any special teams player lined up on the tips needs to have a very good sense of balls and if they're going in or out of bounds or not, because all that Bucs had to do was let that ball go out of bounds, and it was clearly not going to make stay in bounds. So it would have been a penalty, and the Bucs would have been up there near midfield to start their drive. Instead, they try to field it, and here's another thing you ought to know if you're on special teams, and if you're especially if you're playing near the sideline. Even if a ball's not out of bounds, if it's close, you just put a foot out of bounds and touch it, and now the ball's out of bounds, it's still a penalty. Did you know that? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But a special teams player who plays near the boundary is supposed to know it. And anytime they can get a chance to stick a toe on that white line, and you can keep the other foot inbounds like a first baseman in baseball, just keep one foot anchored to the stripe and just catch, or field the ball, catch it, whatever, you just put that ball out of bounds, even if the ball itself is inbounds. And now you made that a penalty on the kickoff team, and now your offense gets to start near midfield. And they could have done that very easily as well. Instead, they treated it like a shortstop and a left fielder who both aren't communicating, trying to catch a shallow fly ball, and it lands in between them, and it's just a disaster. So the point is, against a team as good as the Saints, you really can't do that and have any business winning the game. The fact that the Bucs somehow were still in the game a little bit after that is a miracle. But this goes to the defense. The defense, I thought, played a hell of a football game, and I know people that didn't pay attention to the game. I saw a little bit of this on Twitter from some national guys that said, oh, you know, Tom Brady's not in New England anymore. 34 points up there. He's going to have to score his ass off if he's going to win in Tampa Bay. It's not going to be like New England. No, no, no. Watch the game. Because the Bucs defense, again, there was the two picks. One was directly led to a touchdown. The other one set the set the Saints up in the red zone. And then the third one, the kickoff, those are short fields. And the Bucs defense didn't do a bad job at all. I mean, Drew Brees actually had a passer rating much lower than Brady's for that whole game. But again, the mistakes weren't there with Brees, and again, the mistakes weren't there on special teams like they were for the Bucs. And that was the difference. But it's not like the Saints moved the ball up and down the field. I thought the defense played very well, and I was the one who was skeptical of the defense. If you remember last week's show, it was me saying, hey, this defense was good at the end of last year when they started playing weak teams. They were bad against good teams. I said, let's not just pencil in the defense as a strength of this team yet. Yet on Sunday, it was. I mean, the defense played really well. Carlton Davis, the Bucs really have something there. He held Michael Thomas to 3 catches for 17 yards. And, I mean, they've got a guy. I'm not going to give him lockdown corner capital L, capital C status just yet. But they've got a guy who they drafted who might end up being one of those guys who's taking steps every week, who now goes on the best receiver on the other team, who travels, meaning he doesn't just play on one side of the field. He goes wherever the other guy goes that he's trying to lock down. And Michael Thomas is one of the best in the game. Carlton Davis locked him down, did a great job. Jamel Dean, Sean Murphy Bunting too. Antoine Winfield Jr. was really good. He was all over the place. In his NFL debut, looked very comfortable. He was a whirling dervish. The defense played well, okay? And and they're going to need to. I mean, I'm not saying we can just take it for granted, but I was impressed there, you know, because the Saints, we've seen so many times before, even games the Bucs won in New Orleans in the past, be like 45-35 or just these shootouts. And I didn't think the Saints offense did that much. The Bucs did a good job getting off the field. You would have liked to have seen them maybe stop, you know, make those turnovers go away a couple times every time there was a turnover or a bad play by the offense or the special teams. The Saints were able to cash it in. It's like a goalie in hockey who, you know, there's a breakaway the other way. It's not the goalie's fault, but you kind of hope, hey, can he make this go away? Like Vasilevsky did that last night for the Lightning. I'm recording this on Friday morning. But there was a breakaway in overtime, a shorthanded breakaway that he snuffed out that allowed the Lightning to later on go on and win the game and the series. Same thing with the defense. Yeah, it sucks that they had an interception. They set the Saints up in plus territory, but now you got to make it go away. Would have liked to have seen that, but that's nitpicking because I think the defense overall played really well. They held Drew Brees, and Drew Brees gets the ball out so quick. I was looking at some of the advanced analytics numbers, like pass rush win rate, which we've talked about here, and the Bucs actually ranked last in pass rush win rate this week, which is basically the number of times your pass rushers beat their offensive linemen and get not just sacks, but get pressure on a passing play. The Bucs, of all 32 teams who played in Week 1, ranked 32nd in that. Some of that is Drew Brees. And most teams that play the Saints don't rank very high in that category for that week. So some of that is just a product of the situation they were in. So yeah, the Bucs do need to get more pressure, but a lot of that was Drew Brees. And then on the other side, pass block win rate. The Bucs weren't quite dead last, but they were down there in the 20s this week. And a lot of that, I would think, although I haven't seen the breakdown player by player, admittedly, a lot of that's probably attributable to Donovan Smith, who's just a goddamn turnstile, okay? And I'll tell you what, that's a problem going forward because the Bucs don't have a left tackle that is just like an anchor, a bell cow guy, say, this is our left tackle, don't worry about that side of the field. I mean, he was getting not just beaten, but beaten soundly. I mean, guys are just running around him. And again, I know the Saints are a tough draw. I mean, they got a good front. Tristan Wirfs did plenty okay facing off against Cam Jordan most of the game. But Donovan Smith, if he plays like that, if that's what we're getting from our left tackle, then it's going to be a problem going forward. And one person on Twitter, I think it was Heath Hunt on Twitter, tweeted back and he said, Bobby, what do you mean going forward? He's been their left tackle for a while now. And I was like, no, you're right. I probably shouldn't have said going forward because he's not up to par, in my opinion. Not even my opinion. You guys can see it. As a left tackle in the National Football League. And that affected a lot of the plays. I mean, there's a lot of times that Brady had to alter what he was doing. And there's always going to be pressure, obviously. But there was a lot of times that Donovan Smith just got beat clean. I mean, I don't even mean held this guy up for a second or so. I mean, it was like guys are just running around him. And I don't know what the problem is or if it's gotten worse, but that's got to get better. That was honestly, watching the game, that was the thing that was pissing me off more than anything. Like, you know, Brady throws a pick. What are you going to yell at Brady? I mean, come on, it's Brady. And the kickoff thing was frustrating, but you kind of roll your eyes. But the one thing that was the most frustrating just as a fan that I'm watching on TV, the one thing that made me rewind my DVR so many times with the people I was watching with and said, hey, can you believe this bleep? Was watching Donovan Smith play left tackle on Sunday. That was bad. So that's going to be a problem for the Bucs if it doesn't get better. I don't think it's going to be that bad all season long. But you can't run an offense like that. I mean, it only takes one weak link. And when it's your left tackle and guys are just running around the edge, I mean, my God. And in fairness, I mean, I shouldn't single out Donovan Smith. The entire offensive line did not get good push all day. So this is a combination of things that, you know, they didn't help Brady out at all. First of all, offensive line doesn't get any push. Doesn't get, you know, whether not just pass pro with Donovan Smith, but in the running game too. Second of all, because of that lack of push, you have lack of running game. And then third of all, because of lack of running game, you have an offensive coordinator and a play calling strategy that continues to hammer that run game anyway. And all these things conspire with each other to make life harder for your offense than it needs to be. So I don't think the Bucs did Tom Brady any favors. I'm not going to make excuses for Brady every time because there were mistakes that he made too. But you got protection issues, you've got push and the run game issues, and you've got obsession with the run game issues combining. We threw the ball, what, 8 times in the first half? 8. They threw the ball 8 times in the first half. That is not enough. Okay. I don't care about the scoreboard or anything like that. It's the first half. That's not enough. Throw the ball more in the first half. Throw the ball more in general. And stop banging your head against a brick wall. And as far as the offensive line issues, I mean, it's going to have to get better. I do think it will be better this week. The opponent will not be nearly as tough. And you've got your first home game, Sunday, 1 p.m. on Fox. Oh, one other thing I forgot before we go on to the Panthers game. I can't believe I went into this, 25 minutes into the show, I haven't mentioned it yet. Shame on me. The uniforms. Mwah. Wasn't it nice, no matter what happened in the football game, wasn't it nice to sit there and not even think about the uniforms? Like, not a distraction. They look good. Like I said last week, they should be wearing pewter pants with white instead of all white. But fine. It looked nice. The Bucks look clean and crisp, like a football team should look. Very sharp, very clean, very non-distracting and non-offensive. Because every single snap the Bucks took for the last 5 years, not just every single game, every single snap, I thought about how ugly they looked, at least for just even in the back of my mind, even for a millisecond or two, it registered every single time I looked at the screen. So that was really nice. And we have to commend things where they need to be commended. So I look forward to a full season of that, and I look forward to many, 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 many years, nay, decades, of being able to look at a nice, clean-looking football team. Win, lose, or draw, damn it, they're going to look nice now. And that was appreciated, okay? So email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Give me a follow or tweet at me or whatever if you want to. The fridge schedules, by the way, I sent out a bunch of them this week. So all y'all that emailed me, I had a bunch of requests, which is nice to see. I sent everybody their schedule. If you want one, again, for those that don't know, I print out, I make a fridge schedule every year with the logos and color. Instead of just something you print it off the internet or out of the newspaper, I actually make my own. And it's gorgeous, if I say so myself. You want one of these, email me if you do, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. I'll send it back to you as an attachment. You print it out, preferably color print, okay? Make those logos really pop and put it up on the fridge. And then I like to write, you know, W or L, and then the score, and then I keep them. I can go back over the years. I got all my schedules in a little folder in the garage. You know, that's just the way I am. But anyway, you can do whatever you want with it. Email me if you want to. So, looking at this Carolina game on Sunday, just a couple numbers. First of all, Brady, before this week and his prior 17 seasons, 14-3 as a starter on opening day. Of those three losses, the Patriots won in week two every single time. So Brady's never been 0-2. And I don't think that means anything for this Sunday. Just thought that it was something that was interesting. As far as injuries go for the Bucs right now, the main one is Chris Godwin, who has been in concussion protocol this week. As I record this, it's Friday morning. I have not seen the practice update for Friday's practice yet. He did not participate on Thursday, and his status for Sunday is up in the air. So if he can't play, that would obviously give Carolina a chance to key more on Mike Evans. You've got Scotty Miller, who would have to step up, Justin Watson. Of course, you've got the tight ends as well. The Bucs, you know, this is one of the things that we were so excited about. The Bucs have no shortage of depth with receivers and tight ends, so obviously you want Godwin. We'll see if he can go. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't, but either way, that could be just a little thing that you keep an eye on with the Panthers and their ability to cover Mike Evans, who is okay and has not shown any ill effects from the hamstring or anything and should be good to go this week as the Panthers come in here at 1 o'clock. So it'll be the first home game at Raymond James Stadium. There won't be any fans there. We'll see how it feels or looks. There has been a football game at Raymond James Stadium with USF, who played last week with no fans, but this will be the first NFL one. And, you know, all we know right now is that the first two will be like this. It's possible that all eight of the home games end up being that way. I hope not, but it's possible. In the meantime, though, just going by week one as a whole, not just the Bucs game, but watching all the games around the league, did it feel weird to you at all? I think football feels the least weird, or at least pro football. Watching these games, I know there's crowd noise missing and things like that. I'm not talking about piped-in noise, which I don't care about. But it didn't feel that weird. Like, it felt like a normal NFL Sunday. Like, even the hockey that they're doing, it's not normal. It's not the normal time of year. They're playing at neutral sites. You know, the stands have tarps on them. It feels a little bit different. Not bad. I mean, I'm okay with it. It's better than nothing. but it's not quite the same. Whereas the NFL games, when it was Sunday at 1, and how good did it feel for Sunday at 1 p.m. to be back again? I love that Sunday at 1 when everything kicks off. I fire up the scores on my phone, like I get the app going. I'm monitoring everything. I got action pressing three-way. I love it. Sunday, 1 p.m. during the football season, it's a beautiful thing. The Bucs game kicks off, although the Bucs kicked off late this week. But just it all starts happening at once. And then the other thing I love is that like 30-minute window, usually around like 3:45 to 4:15, when all the 1 o'clock games are ending, and there's action. No matter how stabilized you think everything is, like especially like I'm in a pool with friends where we do every game against the spread, like all 256 regular season games. So even if I don't actually bet individually on a game, just because of my pool, I've got interest in every single game. So you might think, okay, you know, I got so-and-so, you know, Seattle -2 in this game or whatever. Okay, we're stable. At 3:45 to 4:15, everything starts happening. Like, things start showing. Oh, wait, I had that game down as a win. Now I'm losing it. No, wait a minute. I took this other game off the board. I was down by 3 touchdowns. Hey, all of a sudden, it's a tight one. I call it the witching hour. And if you have red zone at home, it's even better. But, man, that was fun on Sunday. And that's what I missed. And so the NFL, having kept the schedule all the same, pretty much, and having kept the sites of the games all the same, at least so far, nothing's been affected, it has felt the most normal of all the sports. Because everything else has had some drastic change it's undergone. Baseball's got a really short season now, different schedule. Hockey and basketball are in bubbles. But the NFL is playing on the same days they always play on, in the same places they always play, albeit with fewer fans. But it doesn't seem, didn't seem that bad yet. And I do appreciate the ones that have even very partial capacity. Like the Thursday night game last night had a few thousand there in Cleveland. The Chiefs game last Thursday did too. And even having a few fans like that makes it feel like the difference between 0 and 5,000 fans is huge. And it's even bigger than the difference between 5,000 and 60,000, you know? Like just having something. It's almost like a binary state, fans or no fans. It's not even about how many. And, you know, with the Bucks, we won't have any. But looking forward to it on Sunday. We will be back next week. What I'm looking, especially what I'm hoping for, aggression from the Bucks. Go after this Carolina team. You're better. Go throw the ball. Don't be married to running the ball just to say you ran the ball. Get ahead of the sticks on first down. You know, you people talk about how important third down conversions are. Like, can this offense convert third downs? That's what's going to determine it, whether or not they score points and win the game. No. The best offenses have the fewest amount of third downs to begin with. They get first downs on first and second down because they're just moving the ball. Yards. It's not complicated. I mean, this is easy, right? Move the ball. It doesn't have to be second and 9. It doesn't have to be second and 8. Second and 10 is not that much different than 2nd and 9 or 2nd and 8, but if it's 2nd and 10, at least you gave yourself a chance on first down to get big yards by throwing it. Whereas if you're running the ball over and over and over for 1, 2, or 3 yards a clip, you're not even giving yourself a chance. And for what? For a couple of yards? I mean, 2nd and 10 really isn't much worse, but at least you had a chance. So I hope to see that help Tom Brady out. And I'm going to be watching the offensive line play very closely, as well as what the defense can do against Teddy Bridgewater and the Carolina Panthers, although I was, again, very excited about what the defense was able to do this past weekend. So to wrap things up, again, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Overall, you know, a little disappointing in week one, but not too bad. Not as bad as I think some people might have thought, and I think everything's going to be fine this weekend. I expect a Buccaneer win this Sunday against the Panthers. So we're keeping an eye on a lot of things, and we'll be back next week with the show. In the meantime, as always, thanks all of you for listening to this show. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform on the single best place for Buccaneer coverage anywhere on the internet, TV, radio, anywhere, joebucksfan.com. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Go see Sean Sullivan, the GM, and a good friend of mine. And thanks to all of you. Have a great weekend. Bucks Panthers Sunday at 1. Don't get too used to these Sunday at 1 p.m. games, though, because we got a lot of variation with the schedule, which I like. But it'll be nice to have an old regular one on this Sunday. I'll talk to you next week. Wherever you are, have a great weekend. Be safe. Have fun. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good night. And go Bucks.